From the City of London, welcome to the OpenFin MVP podcast. I'm your host, Adam Toms.
He was helping us think about the bigger picture. And he asked me, he says, JP, why don't you take this business and really try to take it to the next level and create something much bigger than what you can do within the organization?
That was JP Marley, a 20-year-old veteran of capital markets and CEO of BidFX, a specialized trading platform for global FX markets. JP joins me to talk about how he developed a new product inside a large organization, the subsequent spin out of that company, and more recently, the acquisition of BidFX by SGX, the Singapore Exchange. JP, welcome to the OpenFin MVP podcast.
Thank you very much, Adam. Good to speak to you tonight.
Now, usually I'd ask, how are you doing today? But it's also very customary these days to ask, where exactly are you?
I am in Singapore today for probably the first time in my career. I don't get to think too much about where I am. Been stuck in Singapore for a few months now, probably just like everybody else.
And I think it is such a big change, isn't it? Those of us who have traveled extensively for much of our careers to be kind of static at the moment. How have you been finding that in Singapore?
It's quite interesting. I moved here 14 months ago, so I'm still discovering the country / island. There's a lot of interesting stuff to do. It's lovely with the kids. I've got a wife and two kids, so I'm still enjoying my time. I'm sure for people who have been in Singapore for a few years, it's a different story. But for me, everything is good.
Excellent. Pleased to hear it. Let's jump straight into it. So your background is really interesting. I say interesting because you've actually spent the vast majority of your career at just one firm, which was Trading Screen. But I know you have many roles within that. But I guess, how did you come to join Trading Screen?
I was doing my master's degree in Canada back in 2003. And very interestingly, I was working in finance and information technology. This is, of course, before the term fintech was invented. And I was looking for a small startup organization that was involved somewhere in the UK and in the US. And Trading Screen was really fitting the bill. They were founded a few years before. They were large enough, so I kind of knew that I was not joining just any two guys band in a garage, but they basically had sufficient, I would say, strength and stamina to be able to carry a team. So when I joined the company, that was in 2004, they had about maybe 25, 30 people globally. I joined the team in London, they had about 10 people. It was a very small team, very driven, and they were in exactly the field that I was wanting to join. But before I even go there, maybe I should talk about how I even met the guys, because I cold-called the CEO, who was taken by surprise. The name of the person is Philip Buhanik. He started the company and he was traveling all over the world. So I cold-called him. You know, he was picking up an aircraft from London to New York, coming back to New York where he was based. And I basically told him, listen, I'll see you in New York if you have time next week. And I was in Canada, so I drove down from Ottawa, where I was doing my master's degree. I met with the team. They were in a shared office on Union Square West. I still remember the setup. They were really just all sitting on top of each other. And this type of startup organization really, I would say, attracted me. You really felt that this is where things was happening. This is where the world was being reinvented. And I spoke to the team, spoke to Mike, who was the head of sales back then, and started in London literally 3 weeks after. So in London, they had also a fantastic team. So I ended up spending quite a few years there. That was a fantastic years of London back in 2004 until 2007-8. And then I moved back to New York. As you said, I started another project with them. I moved back to Paris. I moved back to London. And, you know, I later ended up in Singapore. So you're right. I spent many, many years at Trading Screen, but I had many lives within the company.
Super interesting to pick up on something you said there, JP, which is that you originally got in touch with the Trading Screen guys by cold calling them. And this seems to be quite a recurring theme on OpenFin MVP podcasts. I know that Laura from Alloy and also Kim Trotman from DRW Ventures also spoke to us recently about how one of their first steps into their career was also cold calling. So super interesting to see that approach works. So JP, super diversified role at Trading Screen, looking at your background. And I was intrigued by something called Galaxy in your time at Trading Screen. What was that project? Help us understand that better.
That's a good memory. Galaxy was a project which was started on the back of Christine Lagarde's push. You know, she was France's finance minister back in 2009. I was in New York, and Mrs. Lagarde and Paris Europlace really tried to create a momentum in Paris to promote pre- and post-trade transparency in the European corporate bond markets. Of course, the political agenda was to drive more trading as well as issuance of corporate bonds in France, which they successfully delivered, I think, at least on the insurance part. And essentially what happened is we responded to the RFP published by that group. We got the label, which was called the Cassiopeia label. I moved back to Paris for that role. So we started everything from scratch. We had no legal entity. So creating the legal entity, facing the regulators, creating a team. So I was very gifted. We had a fantastic team at Galaxy in Paris. And that was a bit of a wake-up call, I have to say, from a business standpoint, because even though the project was a fantastic technological and operational success, you know, we delivered something from scratch, which really was quite hard to pull off. And the French regulators were fantastic in helping us and guiding us through the process. So I'm very thankful for that. But one thing that I got to realize, you know, as part of that project is do not invest in a project which is purely based on political backing. I later read a lot of, you know, books and blogs and people talking about this type of mistakes, which is happening quite often. Apparently, it's well publicized over the internet, but it needs to make sense for the market, and all the participants need to find, you know, something to win in any business that you create. Even if that business is disruptive, it needs to be, I would say, positive for at least one end of the market. So I would say Galaxy was a not an economical success, but a very, very good success, I think, for me to learn by making mistakes.
So building from that and taking those lessons from Galaxy and your time at Trading Screen, obviously BidFX was formed during your same tenure. So how did BidFX come about? And, you know, what are the challenges of creating a new business inside a larger company like Trading Screen?
So we started BidFX, incubated within Trading Screen. So it was not known as BidFX back then. That was mid-2013. And TS had an embryonic FX platform, which was not actively promoted. And, you know, the CEO, Philippe, gave me the responsibility to create a small team of, you know, driven individuals. And we started the journey to revisit the FX e-trading ecosystem by leveraging the technology that Trading Screen had built for many, many years. So TS really gave us a huge advantage here with its global infrastructure and presence. It's kind of like starting a business without having to really worry about, you know, how you're going to create your support units. So it basically came up fully loaded with finance and HR and legal. And the only thing we had to do was focus on the business. So from that angle, it was a huge help, I think, for us to get the business off the ground. Then came more difficult conversations to have internally in order to fight for resources, because, you know, the moment you grow, you have an increasing amount of resource requirements, and you're now fighting with the rest of the business unit in order to get what your client really, really want to have done tomorrow. You know, you're fighting against the other business units within the organization. So that certainly was also another interesting learning experience, having gone through this within the early part of BidFX.
I think it's always interesting to hear other people's stories. And, you know, so many people think the grass is greener on the other side. You know, they had it easier because they were incubating a larger firm, whatever it is. So it's great to hear the stories of the pros and the cons of being incubated in a business like that. And, you know, it sounds like many common challenges, actually, that a lot of different businesses face as they try to innovate inside their firms.
Yeah, no, I think to pinpoint on what you just said here, I think it is definitely easier to be an intrapreneur as opposed to an entrepreneur. I didn't have to pull money out of my own pockets to pay the guys at the end of the month. I do not discount at all the fact that, you know, it is not exactly the same thing. But at the end of the day, if it's your own money or not your own money, it doesn't change the fact that you have to work extremely hard to get anything off the ground. It doesn't matter if you're inside of an organization or outside. We did work with the entire team. And that was true for Galaxy as well, by the way. I mean, we worked easily 14, 16 hours a day for very, very long periods to get some projects off the ground. Nothing different compared to, I think, what, you know, some of the new startups are doing. So from that standpoint, you know, I think we had our fair share of midnight oil.
Now, BetFX was really starting to operate independently inside Trading Screen. And it feels like you guys had a vision or an understanding that you'd be spinning out at some stage. That became very visible and clear to the outside world, I guess, in March 2019, when SGX made an investment in BetFX. I'm curious, how did that investment come about?
So it is a very good question. TS had a change of CEO back in summer 2016. Philippe left and Pierre joined the organization. And when Pierre joined, he comes from an FX background. He was running FX as well as other departments within a large investment bank, and basically looked at the business that we had built and, you know, was very, I would say, encouraging, and he was helping us think about the bigger picture. And he asked me, he says, JP, why don't you take this business and, you know, really try to take it to the next level and create something much bigger than what you can do within the organization. And this is really at that point that we decided to spin off BetFX. It was not a popular vote, I have to say, within the organization. Pierre was kind enough to support the project, and we ended up really creating an entire business division within Trading Screen with the view to spin off at the beginning of 2017, which is exactly what we did. BetFX was created on January 4th, 2017. So, you know, immediately when we created the business and we spun off, we started looking at a longer term business plan, you know, the typical 3 to 5 year plan. So Trading Screen turned from an incubator to really a VC. And really looking at ways to help us promote and fast track the growth and support us also with any business support functions that you can think of, legal, finance, et cetera, et cetera. So back in 2017, we looked back, you know, we had done some projects with SGX in the past. I knew the team a little bit, Pierre knew them as well. So we approached them and we ended up raising capital in March 2019. With the view to potentially sell the business to SGX later down the line. I was not expecting the sale to happen that quickly, to be honest, but we've done really, really well, and the company has expanded quite a lot. Trading Screen and SGX and the management team collectively, we've decided to sell the business entirely to SGX in summer 2020, which is something which was announced relatively recently. So you're right, it was really back in summer 2016, to come back to your question, that we decided to raise external investment and really go for like a proper phase of growth for the business.
Now, JP, you're based in Singapore, and I'm curious as to exactly how you ended up in that location. Everybody seems to have a story about how they arrived in Asia, and it'd be great to hear yours.
Yeah, I've traveled back and forth to Singapore for many, many years. Even from when BetFX was started, you know, Asia has always been a very important part of our business. You know, we drive a very large percentage of our revenue and our clients from Asia. So as a CEO of the organization, I had to really be present here pretty much every other month. I used to come to Asia. Yeah, so basically Asia became too big for us not to really pay even more attention. So we've grown the team. The majority of the R&D department is out in London, but we have a very strong team here in Asia to promote Southeast Asia and the rest of the region. As we took the investment from SGX, part of that investment in 2019 was to increase the sales and marketing distribution elements. So we had gone through the initial build outs of the business. So we were now trying to scale and adding distribution to the business. So we created Hong Kong. You know, we have added Australia, Sydney to the list of offices. And we're now in the process of opening Tokyo as well. So really been booming for us here in Asia. And I really felt that as the CEO of the organization, I really had to be there to help the team just cope with the increasing demand of our product in the region. Now, as I moved to Singapore, I was lockdown. So I was not planning to stay in Singapore. I was planning to travel every other week or maybe every week somewhere else in Asia. But yeah, so I kind of enjoy, I have to say, outside of the fact that I lost quite a few kilos of not having to fly and wine and dine and enjoy these lovely meals that you can find on aircrafts. But yeah, outside of it, Singapore is great.
Yeah, it really is interesting, isn't it? Looking back over these last few months, and we mentioned earlier, just so many people are used to traveling extensively, you know, meeting clients in lots of different places, having all those external stimuluses that we took for granted, even traveling through airports and, you know, the different restaurants or whatever it may be. And we all find ourselves in a very unique set of circumstances. And I think, you know, just talking to everybody and listening to many people over the past couple of months on OpenFin MVP podcast, that clearly everybody's taking away something quite different from this experience. So Singapore is a really interesting location. And from my seat in London, we see MAS, the Monetary Authority of Singapore, as being incredibly forward-leaning, supporting and nurturing fintechs and investment in Singapore. And you know, there's no bigger way of expression of that than the Singapore Fintech Festival, which is attended by tens of thousands of people every year. The UK has, you know, similar initiatives with Department of Trade and Industry and others, but I'm curious, what is your experience of MAS on the ground in Singapore?
We operate a non-regulated business, so my involvement with MAS has been relatively infrequent so far. But overall, I think, you know, they have different departments, different divisions within the authorities, and I think so far it's been a pleasure to deal with them. So they have done something that probably very few regulators would be able to do. They've been able to run very, very long-term projects with, and they've been attracting literally all the major investment banks are now setting up an FX infrastructure in Singapore. It's not an easy thing to do when you think that, you know, this whole market was driven by Tokyo, I think, for that, at least that time zone. Being able to move an entire market over to a small island in the middle of Southeast Asia was not a given. And they've been able to pull it off. You know, I think it's fair to say, you know, that we can applaud what they've done so far, and what it will do also in the long term is, as we see potential challenges in the rest of the region, you know, we see some banks relocating their trading desks over to Singapore, and MAS at the end of the day have laid down the ground for an entire ecosystem of FX, you know, trading platforms as well as liquidity providers. And now they're also trying to promote investment managers to come and set up shop in Singapore. And they are helping them, you know, by coordinating also a new type of investment vehicle. I don't know if you know, but the authorities have allowed the creation of what they call a VCC setup. I'm not sure if I use the correct legal terminology here. I'm not a lawyer by any means, but I have seen a huge number of our clients, hedge fund clients, setting up VCC variable capital company, I believe it's called. They're really setting up everything to make sure that they succeed long term in their overall plan, which is to create this rich ecosystem of investors and banks and liquidity providers and trading platforms in Singapore.
So Singapore is a growing hub for FX, as you mentioned. It's probably a good point for us to transition and just talk a little bit more about BidFX and your business operations. And I guess, you know, what's hot in the FX space right now? This is, you know, clearly a very global asset class with a long history. But there is change in this space, and I think it'd be interesting for our listeners to understand, you know, your view of the evolving landscape.
Our space is continuously evolving. I have to say, I really enjoy that industry because there's a huge margin to innovate in this space. Some of the incumbent platforms have been there and really haven't changed their technology or their mode of operations in decades. And this is coming back to the reason why we started BidFX. We looked at a market that we could disrupt with newer technology, with more agile development, and with really a highly motivated team. I keep saying this to my guys. At the end of the day, what the customers buy from us is is not really just the technology, it's the service. You know, you can have the best technology in the world. If you don't have the service that come with it, it doesn't matter. You know, the customer won't come back. As much as I don't buy into this concept of move fast and break things, and I know you guys have reused a bit of that motto as well, you know, don't break things. I do agree that you do not want to break things, but ultimately when you're dealing with technology, there are issues. And I keep saying to my guys, your customers will not judge you based on the issues that you've had. They'll judge you on how you react and you respond to these issues and whether you're reactive and you solve their problem as soon as they come up. Now, you have to do this within reason. Of course, you cannot have many issues, but ultimately my point is, you know, customer service is what drives the market. FX and the entire, you know, I would say technology world, even though it is technology, it is driven by relationship. Relationship at the end of the day, my good friend, ex-RBS guy, once told me, you know, relationship trumps everything. It trumps price and everything. At the end of the day, we are in a highly technical and automated landscape, but we do deliver, I would say, a human service to our clients and to our customers, and, you know, we'll be there in the long run. And I think that's what will make a difference between BitFX and the rest of the competition.
Well, JP, it's been fantastic to talk to you today, and I wish you and the team the best of luck with your continued growth.
Thank you, Adam. It's been a pleasure as well, and I look forward to the next episodes.
So I hope you found that as informative as I did. I would like to thank JP for joining us and you for listening. Join us next time as we speak with innovators and thought leaders in finance and technology on the OpenFin MVP podcast.